You are listening to the Men's Ministry Roundtable Podcast. This is a ministry of Christian Assembly Church in Los Angeles, California. I am your host, Marvin Enriquez, and this is how we get down.
Welcome back to another exciting edition of the Men's Ministry Roundtable Podcast. I realize that I say that every single time. Oh, wait. There we go. Just for George. George wanted me to do that. And I realized that I've used the same introduction for the last, I don't know, 2 years or so. And maybe it's time to change the introduction. But welcome back to the Men's Ministry Roundtable Podcast. We are your friendly podcast host and DJ Marvin.
DJ Marvin.
Let's get the applause going.
All right.
There you go. Live audience.
This show is being filmed in front of a studio audience. Yes. We've got people in the house today. People are in the house. Well, who's in the house? Around the round table, we have George Hot Flash Fernandez.
Good morning,
George. How are you today?
I'm great. Thank you for asking.
Good. You want to put that microphone right underneath your mouth to get the full effect?
What did you say?
Get the microphone right near your mouth to get the full effect.
Got your microphone.
Also, we have Robert.
I don't know how this goes.
Concepcion!
Yay! There you go. He's on time.
Hello, Robert. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good to see you today. He is on time today.
Yeah, looking good.
And that's only because we had a meeting with Tom Hughes before this meeting. So that's the only reason he is on time.
The fear tactic.
The fear of Tom. There's the fear of God. There's the fear of Tom. Those are the two fears we operate with.
Speaking of that, Hyro had to drive all the way over here from his block. I said, why are you driving?
From his block?
Yeah, right there, right? He lives right
100 yards
church,
away.
Right? And he goes, I don't want to be late.
Well, he drove across the street?
Yes.
Okay, true story.
Yes.
Wednesday nights, Mr. Fernandez and I operate a men's huddle group. And on Wednesday nights, I will walk across the street from my office over to our huddle. Guess who drives across the street to our huddle location?
Well, but, that's him, right? That's not the fear of you.
He gets in his little sports car. He revs it all up, drives one traffic light across the street, parks the car. Puts up the sunshade.
At night.
Covers the car.
There you go. Yes. That's what he does.
He waxes it before he gets over there. And that's Mr. Hot Flash Fernandez for you. Mm. But also, around the round table, we have... Hold on. I got to get some,
You got to say this in a deep voice,
hold
man.
Hold on. Here he goes.
The introduction has to be great.
Ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, Ralph. Dr. Love Delgado! Ralph, welcome to the show, Ralph.
Thank you. It's good to be here. What an awesome introduction. This is way better than the one from a couple of years ago where you just said, there's Ralph.
What's he doing here?
Ralph, you were on the show right in our first season.
In its infancy.
Its infancy, about three or four years ago. And
we don't say years. We say seasons. That's right.
3 or 4 seasons ago. And we've upgraded the operations. We've got a brand new podcast recording studio with a mixer, with sound effects, microphones. So, Ralph, we're glad you're back.
Headphones.
Yeah.
For the live audience.
You're not wearing them?
Live audience.
It's good to be back. The studio, is much bigger, too, than the last time I was here.
Well, Ralph has a PhD in love, and today, men of Christian Assembly, he's going to be talking to you about some practical things that you can do to spice up your marriage. Mm.
Yes.
It's not even about... Hey, wasn't he the highest grossing or listening audience we had?
He grossed us 12 cents. That episode really...
Come on, let's get some cheering in there.
There you go. Better late than ever.
I've never seen Marvin have so much fun here.
I know. But you know what else I can do? I discovered this yesterday.
Hello, welcome. If you're shopping in aisle 7, please.
Sandra, please report to me.
Okay, that's too much fun. Well, Ralph is here. But listen, what's happening around the round table? We want to tell you guys that over 1,900 people have downloaded an episode of the Men's Ministry Roundtable Podcast.
That's the same number last week.
No, last week it was 11,750. That means in 2 weeks, we grew by 150 listeners, 11,900.
I would just say 12,000.
We were very close to 12,000. And we promised, guys,
is
we
that how
promised.
You forget the budget?
That is.
Yeah, just round up.
That's what you do with our council budget? You round up?
Round up. Round up.
Can you round up my salary this year, please, council member?
Rumpum.
Marvin Enriquez, check in.
Yeah, Marvin Enriquez, aisle four. That's my part-time job at Walmart. Right, that's what I do.
Tom's office, please.
Tom's office. Please report to Tom's office. Thank you so much, guys, for listening to the Men's Ministry Roundtable Podcast. And each and every one of you that listens, we have a special place in our hearts and also in our backyards. Because, Ralph, we're going to be hosting a barbecue for our listeners, exclusively for our listeners. Robert, tell them where the barbecue is going to be.
It's going to be at your house.
It is going to be at my house. And you're going to be cooking some tri-tip.
No, I want you to say you're going to do brisket?
No, I don't do brisket. I do tri-tip.
Tri-tip. Okay, well.
Okay, so we're going to be
cooking. Just like the ones we had in Men's Gathering, right?
Yes. Maybe not quite as good.
That was a cheap shot.
Yeah, that was a cheap shot. Robert takes cheap shots, I mean.
Wait. No. Did you not enjoy the barbecue at the Men's Gathering?
I didn't try it, to be honest with you.
Why is that, Marvin?
Because the line was so long that I couldn't get in line.
Marvin had a veggie burger.
I did.
That's more than I had.
I didn't have that either.
You had pizza. Afterwards.
I don't eat vegetables, especially not formed in burger patties.
What was that?
At 9 o'clock. Slice of pizza.
Is that what you had?
Yep.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you for being the last to be served. You are a true gentleman. Tell me, Robert, how was the barbecue?
It was pretty good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How's the mac and cheese? That's what I really wanted to taste.
The mac and cheese? I don't think I had mac and cheese.
Oh, you did.
I did?
You had a little take-home plate.
I didn't have take-home plate.
No, I'm kidding.
Our listeners, we will be hosting a barbecue at my house. Robert and I will be cooking up some tri-tip for you guys. Right now, we have two guys that have registered for the barbecue.
That's not right. Really? So, just two?
Two guys so far. Luis Soriano and...
Luis.
And Luis. Luis also emailed me wanting to register, so... Luis and Luis, thank you so much for listening.
It's the same person.
Not the same. Luis and Luis are not the same person.
There's three. And Luis.
I thought you had almost 12,000 listeners.
We do, but only two of them have registered for the barbecue. Apparently, they don't want to eat with us.
They're still gun shy about last. Ooh, nice. Well, unicorns and rainbows. How nice.
Okay.
Whoa,
that's not unicorn and rainbow.
What else we got here? Oh, yeah. Okay. I got all the sound effects now. Luis and Luis have registered to be on their barbecue. So, Luis and Luis, I'm going to send you my address, and you're going to get exclusive access to the barbecue.
Just say it out. Just tell everyone what it is.
No. I'm not going to say it on here. But if you want to come to the barbecue, this
is your last in La Crescenta.
At my home in La Crescenta. You have to email me at men@cachurch.com. I will respond to your email with my address and the date. We're going to do this in the next 2 weeks, guys.
When is the deadline?
The deadline is like this week. So by October 1st, right? Today is September 21st. By October 1st, you must email men@cachurch.com.
Let's see if we can double the responses.
Let's see if we can get at least four guys. Four guys. Hey, four of them plus four of us, that's eight. That seems like a good group to me.
Yeah, that's a nice group. Meal.
Ralph, you're invited to join us for the tri-tip dinner at my house as well.
Thank you. Are you going to have enough?
The cheap
you
shot.
See, you there see you what go. You started?
Sorry.
There just, you go. Thank you, Ralph.
You see what you started, Robert?
I'm just going with the flow.
For those of you guys that attended the Men's Gathering last week, thank you so much for attending. If you did not get barbecue, here's an invitation for you to get barbecue. Just email me.
It was Robert's fault.
Robert kept feeding all of his friends first, and there was
Are
not
you going
to
have enough? Marvin, that's the question
that's
of the
day.
That's
the question. All right, well, thank you for the 12,000 of you that have downloaded an episode, making this the most successful podcast in Eagle Rock, north of Colorado Boulevard for left-handed professionals of accounting. Thank you so much. We're so grateful for each and every one of you guys listening to the show. Okay, enough of this nonsense. This week, I was driving my son to his football game, or to a football game. He was going to watch the Crescenta Valley Falcons take on the Glendale High, whatever, Spartans or whatever mascot they got over at Glendale High School. And I was driving him and his buddy listening to the conversation. You guys are dads. You guys have probably done this, right? You listen to the banter about kids in the car. It's kind of a fun thing to do. Try to decipher what they're saying. And I don't know about you, but I have a 15-year-old son in my back seat with another one of his 15-year-old friends, and I had no idea because they were speaking in code to me. And at one point, my son said, he was telling his friend Reese, "Hey, Reese, that guy, you know, Mr. Smith, the algebra class, blah, blah, blah. Oh, he's an NPC.
Ooh, he called him that?
He called him an NPC.
Wow.
Ralph, what's an NPC?
I have no idea.
I didn't either. So I turned around to Robert, do you know what an NPC is? You have teenage sons.
Wow. No, not NPC.
No? George, what's an NPC?
No puedo cocinar.
No, I have no idea.
maybe. So I turned around. I don't try to interrupt them. I let them have their little moment. But I turned around and I said, okay, guys, you guys keep using this phrase. He's an NPC. He's an NPC. What is an NPC? And he said, oh, Dad, you know, when you play video games, it's non-playable character. You know, when you play a video game, there's those people that you interact with in the game, and they're just very robotic. Hello, you have reached the portal for gate number 3. Please proceed this way. You know, like there's those non-playable characters. And so he said, that means we call NPCs people who are very robotic, like very stiff, boring.
Is he saying he's a boring teacher?
Like boring, stiff, robotic, kind of non-emotional, just kind of like one of those robot figures. You know, when you play like the basketball games and there's the fake audiences in the back and they're just kind of,
Like the one that just, press the button.
You like these buttons.
There you go.
Like those people.
You waving your hand like that.
Those people in the background that are just kind of fake fans and video games, those are non-playable characters. Mm. So I got to thinking, what are some of the generational idioms or generational slang phrases that kids are using these days? And I'm going to quiz you guys because you guys are all hip and with it in the modern generation. So
wait, who's your resource on this?
My resource.
Your son.
Well, my resource actually was Google and Ricky. So I had Ricky confirm that these are real words that kids are using because I don't know any of them. But
Enrique, huh?
Enrique. We're going to play a little game, and the first of you to guess 3 correct answers will win a fabulous prize. Robert, tell them what the prize is.
Barbecue at Michelle Marvin's
house. Yay, you got it.
First in line.
Okay, so we're going to start with our guest because we're good hosts that way. So, Ralph, one of the words that kids are using is the word drip. What does that mean?
He likes coffee.
Drip coffee. I see what you did there.
Yeah.
I see what you did there. No. True. What is drip, guys?
Is that clothes?
It is.
His outfit.
Hey. Good job. It has to do with your fashion or your outfit.
That guy's there's good drip and there's bad drip.
I'm not sure if there's bad drip, but it's just your drip is on point, is what somebody would say. I'm like, yeah, you got a nice outfit. Okay. Here we go. Robert, what does the word bet mean? Bet.
That's true.
Hey, that actually is right.
Bet. There you go.
So, hey, we're going to go to my house for barbecue.
Bet.
That means yes, you're confirming. Stop. How did you know that? Your
kids, my son
your
uses
kids
that.
Uses it. All right, good job.
How much?
Go brush your teeth, Aiden. Bet.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. George, here's yours. No cap. What does that mean?
It sounds like something with stocks.
I would say they don't small have any, cap, they don't have any
big
money.
Cap. They don't no have any cap. Money? No
that,
cap.
That's what I would go to.
It means I'm not lying. I'm being serious.
Bet.
Yeah.
No
so,
cap means I'm you, not lying.
Like, hey, we're going to go to the Dodger game today. No cap? Bet. See? I'm teaching you how to use these words. So when
Kanan
you go,
is what much the, too young for
what
this.
What are the chances I'm ever going to speak like that?
When you go home tonight, talk to Kanan that way, okay?
He will go, where's my father? What happened to him?
Okay, him. Ralph, back to you.
Uh-oh.
The word bougie. What does bougie mean?
Bougie. Is that like high-end or kind of, high-end, stuck-up?
That's exactly what that means. Luxurious, fancy, high end.
Like you're, George.
Yeah.
George is most definitely bougie.
This is
the epitome of a bougie. The guys show up in white pants and white shoes. Yeah. I mean, they're the crispest, whitest shoes you've ever seen.
Now, Marvin, would this be appropriate? Bougie drip.
Yes, I think that would be appropriate.
George.
Some young person
drip.
Is bet. Bet. No cap. Some young person right now is running off the road because he's laughing so hard at the words that we're using and how we're using them.
Yes. But look at the shirt, though. I mean,
this morning,
70s.
Hey, listen, no cap. This morning, Tom Hughes wanted to keep time because there was no clock in the room. And so he asked the bougiest guy in the room for his watch. And so Tom Hughes is wearing this $20,000 watch. And so you know what George leans over and whispers in my ear? He said, "That watch is worth more than your car."
Bougie.
That's exactly bougie.
Bet.
Okay, this one's yours, Robert.
Oh, boy.
Bussin. What is bussin?
You're making this up.
Bussin.
Busy?
Not busy.
Wait. It's hip.
Nope, not hip.
I was going to say, need a ride?
No, you're not riding. You're not riding the bus.
I don't know.
Bussin is delicious or good. So, hey, let's go to In-N-Out. Oh, that double-double. That was bussin.
That has nothing to do with this.
I don't make these words up. Your kids do. Okay, this one's yours, George. Sus.
Ooh.
What'd you say to me?
What's sus? Let's not go down that road. It looks sus.
Suspect? Like
suspicious.
Suspicious? Yeah. It doesn't look... Yeah.
What did you say to me? What is that? Oh, you thought it was shush, right? Sus.
No, I just, sus. I was thinking like suspicious.
Okay, you got it right.
Right?
All right, last round. Ralph.
Walked in.
What's the Riz? Riz.
Carlton.
Riz.
Oh, I figured that one out.
Riz. Putting on the Riz.
Yeah, exactly. What does it mean?
Oh, I thought it meant reason. Like, what's a Riz? What's a reason?
Nope. Darn it. Riz.
What is it?
Yeah, Ritz Carlton comes to mind. Riz. High end?
No, that was bougie.
Sorry. Yeah. I was trying to double dip with bougie.
Riz. So so we all have boys in this room. So your young man approaches a young lady and he's trying to riz her. Flirt with her, I guess.
Flirt.
So what is that word even
what's
come
the
from?
Derivation? What's the etymology of riz?
How does Ricky
flirt?
Know these things?
Ricky confirmed them. Okay.
Oh, okay.
You got it from Hiro.
Robert. What is mid? Oh, your shoes are mid.
Cheap.
Nope. No. The opposite of bougie. No. What's mid?
Is it like
bad,
high top,
bad,
and low
bad.
Top, mid top?
Well, I mean.
Oh, mid is bad.
No.
Oh.
Right?
What?
Bad.
Bad?
Yeah.
Mid is not bad.
No, it's not. Okay. Mid quality.
Mid is mediocre.
Mediocre.
It's
there
in
you
the
go.
Middle. It's like
mediocre.
Mediocre. It's not great. It's not.
How
it's not that? Cheap.
So you can say how was dinner? Is mid.
It's mid. You know. It's like so. It's all right.
Like mired.
Not Come like that on. At all. Okay, the last one for you. What is slaps?
Slaps?
Yeah.
This is going to take a different turn right now.
I have
no
idea what that is.
Slaps. Yes. Is that like hilarious?
Slaps?
Funny? Like, that's so funny.
I'll go with that.
No, it's hilarious. Not that.
No.
Hey, nice. That in and out, that double-double slaps.
Very good.
Yeah. It's very good. Really great. That double-double slaps.
What's the age like bracket?
I don't know.
Are these people using this?
15 to 17, maybe. I don't know. Because even the 20-year-olds probably don't use these words.
Slaps?
Slaps. So, all of you guys out there listening to us, go home and talk to your teenage sons and use these words, and you're going to get some cred. And you won't be mid. And that's a no cap.
And that's a bet.
And that's a bet.
That's a wrap.
So that's your public service announcement from the old dudes around the round table.
Wow.
Thank you very much, old dudes. All right. Well, coming back to our show, George, give us the financial report for September 21st. What's the outlook?
True cap.
Yeah, no cap.
No, actually, I was listening to this one financial individual speak last week. It was very, very interesting. And he came up with a concept of when it comes to your finances and just your overall financial health, that at least once a year you should do what he called a financial fire drill. And I loved that concept. It's basically look at where you are, and if a catastrophic or a change of life event happened right now, what position would you be in to respond? Because if you think about it, most times something happens, it's really unexpected, right? So the last catastrophe, in essence, we had was this thing called COVID, right? And look how it impacted everyone, and the vast majority of people weren't prepared, and that's why the government, you know, in my opinion, you know,
responded the way they did and just gave kind of free money to everyone. But that's not the role of government, and we should be self-sufficient. So if you have a if you put yourself in this position of having a financial fire drill, what would happen, for example, if I had lost a job and I can't go back to work 6 months, what would I do, right? What if there was, a, God forbid, a catastrophic illness? What would I do? What if the stock market corrected by 20, 25%? What would I do? How would I respond? And see what that does, and then that would allow you, hopefully, to make changes if you're not in a position to navigate that successfully. And this would happen in all whatever seasons of life you are. So let's say you're a retired individual and there's a catastrophic health incident that happens. Where would funding come from if you had to do that? Because now you're in a, you know, maybe in a different season of life and you're not working. What if you're a young individual and you're saving to buy a home, and maybe the way you had your money invested wasn't in something less volatile because you're looking to access that money in a short period of time, and the stock market corrects. You're like, now I can't buy this home that I was planning to. So that would be a takeaway. I would encourage you to basically do kind of a financial fire drill. Look where you are, assess all your financial positions, your investments, your cash flow, your work, your savings, all those things. See if they can withstand various challenges if one were to occur, and if not, adjust accordingly. And if there's anything that I could do to help or walk with you in that season or in this exercise,
so envision a financial fire drill before it actually happens, and what would, how would you respond?
Exactly. Just think about it. When you were in school, when all the kids were in school and we were young, we used to have fire drills. Remember? So what happens if there's a fire? Instead of panicking, well, once a year you've gone through this and this is what you do, this is how you respond. In the case of there being a fire, we've already gone through it. We know what to do. So
and
in the case
where there being somebody wants you to help them walk through that, how would they contact you?
Email me at jorgef@cachurch.com.
Jorgef@cachurch.com. That's the man, and you can ask him any question. And of course, you're happy to meet with folks with whatever their life situation happens to be, whether they're in fire drill or maybe they're not, right? But they're planning or dreaming.
True or cap.
No cap, and it's a mid.
Yeah, bougie.
Don't be bougie.
Okay, bougie.
No. You got to cut your expenses. You got to cut your expenses.
Bougie up.
All right. Thank you very much, Jorge, for that financial fire drill. So, guys, if you want to reach out to George again, that's Jorge F. J-O-R-G-E-F at cachurch.com. All right. Well, before we move on to the main attraction, Robert, what's happening with the Men of Christian Assembly?
What up with sports?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, we're going to talk about the playoffs in a little bit. But, Robert, what's happening with the Men of CH?
Wait, we talk about your Dodger.
Oh, yeah. I did.
You got this great shirt.
I did get the Guatemalan Heritage Night. We don't do that in Guatemala.
That was a sound effect.
Oh. I did get the Guatemalan Heritage Knight.
What was that effect that you're doing?
Dodger jersey. Yeah, what was that? We're going to record that sound effect.
And
we're going to add that to our sound bank. Here, I got another one for you. Go ahead.
Wow.
That is a cool shirt, I must admit. That is a cool shirt.
Robert, what's happening with the Men of Christian Assembly?
What? Okay, well, we're going to have an 8-week life group that's happening September 25, and it's going to be sermon-based. It'll be a group for men, co-eds, and marriage. And also, we're going to have Marriage on the Rock.
We are going to have... But let's go back up to the... I mean, you just blew past that announcement. Come on, let's just slow down and let's savor those announcements, Robert. So all tell right. me more about the 8-week life groups. What is that? Who is that for?
Well, it's for people who are on the fence trying to figure out whether they want to follow or join a life group, figure out what it's like to be part of a group. This is a great chance for them to jump in, see what it's like, and it's going to be along with our sermon series, 8-week sermon series on what's apologetics.
What's the title of the sermon series that we're on right now?
Right now, it's With All Your Mind.
With All Your Mind. So you follow along with the sermons,
yeah,
and then you get to discuss them in a small group format. And we have groups for who?
For men, for co-ed, marriage, Zoom, in person, and we've got them all over the city.
Great. And so if somebody wanted to jump into one of those 8-week groups, what was the first step they should take?
Oh, well, it's actually posted on our website. So our groups are on the website, and the 8-week life groups should be All you need to do is email the leader and they should be able to respond to you.
Wonderful. So if you want to get some more information on 8-week life groups, those are beginning September 25th. So next week, we're recording this on Thursday the 21st. So they'll be starting. But if you happen to catch this episode maybe a week or two later, we would still encourage you.
Then shame on you.
Then shame on you. We would still encourage you to jump on into one of those groups. It might be a 7-week group or a 6-week yeah. group, but I'm sure the group would still love to have you. Go on their website and look at 8-week groups. And secondly, the second announcement was Marriage on the Rock. And Rob's going to tell us more about that in a little bit, but just give them the details, Robert.
Yeah, it's for people who want to strengthen their marriage. It's going to be, you know, Ralph Delgado is our resident doctor of love, and he should be able to kind of give us the rundown on what
if he can't help you, no one can.
There you
go. Wow. You talked about a financial fire drill. This is marriage fire drill.
Yes.
But okay. Marriage on the Rock, I meaning the drill. Rock. Being Jesus hey. As the cornerstone of everything.
I saw what you did there, Robert. I saw what you did there. Good job.
Nice intro.
In our life.
Well, with that intro, we are going to transition over to Dr. Love. We're going to talk to Ralph a little bit about
applause, the... Applause. Come on. There we go.
I was going to give him the full introduction. Ralph has been on our staff team for 10 years almost. And he is consistently championing efforts for marriage and for men to be greater husbands, partly because of a lot of what his own personal journey has been. If you've never heard Ralph's story, please come to Marriage on the Rock, because I'm sure he's going to share some of that with you. If not, he can always grab a cup of coffee with you. But part of his journey is a lot of what he's learned in marriage, and he's very open and honest with his journey. And so part of that is he brings in to the marriage classes, and I think that's what makes the classes that you lead, Ralph, so successful. So tell us a little bit about Marriage on the Rock, and then maybe give the guys some practical tips from your learning, from your own journey, that they can apply to their marriages today.
Yeah, thanks, Marvin, for having me. And yeah, you mentioned that I like to champion marriage. And, you know, by the way, listeners, the Dr. Love moniker was not something I gave myself. It's these three dudes I'm sitting with.
Wait, the
with.
Certificate in your office that says that? Who gave you that one?
Exactly.
That... Yeah, well, you said, I'll only be a guest if you call me by...
Oh, my gosh. liar, pants on fire.
Cap.
Mid. But anyway...
Cap. No cap.
You know, so Marvin said I've been championing marriage, and as I look back, I consider myself a wounded healer, and I think the reason I have a heart to speak so much about marriage is I have marriage failure in my past. Many of your listeners would know this if they've been at CA for any season of time, but I got married at 17 and divorced at 21. I wasn't a Christ follower. I thought, well, I just made a mistake with the person I picked, and I was too young, and came to Christ out of that divorce at 21, 22, and several years later at 28, I married a second time, but now I'm a Christian, and I thought, well, I just need to be married to a Christian, and everything will be well, and so I got married, and 5 years later, that wife... I had the same outcome as the first wife when I wasn't a Christian. Both my marriages ended when my wives had affairs. So after that second marriage failure, I went and talked to a marriage family therapist and started realizing that some of those outcomes I was having was a result of lack of knowledge. You know, marriage wasn't modeled really well for me. My dad was an alcoholic, and so I saw a model, you know, somebody who drank a lot and was very selfish, self-centered, and my mom just kind of put up with him. So when I got married, I think that was my same model, but without the alcohol, because I was determined, well, I'm not going to be like my dad and be, you know, somebody who abuses alcohol. But I did not know how to nurture a wife, a woman. I did not know how to make a woman feel valued and cherished and affirmed and loved. I did not know the biblical model of marriage. But since then, since that second failure, in getting some help, you know, with marriage family therapy and lots of books and marriage seminars, I've just learned some really practical things that will work for any guy. And that's why I'm excited to share about marriage with, you know, with couples or with men especially, is that, man, you can have an incredibly awesome marriage by just doing a few really practical things.
Yeah.
And as Christ followers, we as men have more opportunity than any other guys to just have satisfying, fulfilling, enjoyable marriages. And, you know, the thing is, we're called to lead, right, as men. And so if we will lead these things in our marriages, our wives, believe it or not, they will just come right along and respond and follow our good leadership. So that's why I'm mostly excited about sharing marriage. It's not because I'm so awesome at it. I'm not Dr. Love. I'm sharing the things I share out of failure. I share out of, you know, destructive behaviors that ended up in destroyed marriages. And I want to help guys, if they're struggling, to do some of the things I've learned so that they can have a really awesome marriage. Love being married and be at the point where their wives love being married to them.
Yeah.
You know, so many guys think they have a good marriage. But if you ask their wives, or if you look at their wife's face, you would see something different or hear something different. So anyway, that's why I like
one
to
of
do
the
this.
You mentioned this a little bit, but one of the most often complaints that I hear when I meet with a couple from the wife, especially the female, is this idea of, I just wish he would lead. And oftentimes we have to define that, because sometimes they don't even know what that means, but they're, what they're longing for, what they're looking for is spiritual leadership, is household leadership. So it's not a domineering type of leadership, but it really is, I really wish he would guide us and sacrifice for us instead, you know, get out in front of it. And I think, I don't know if it's culturally, if it's generationally, but I feel like that's missing in some of our men's lives today.
Yeah, that's a great point, Marvin, and a great setup leads me into just a couple things I would share that are practical. The first one speaks to what you just said. We as men have to know our calling in marriage. I don't think a lot of men, I know I'm speaking about myself in those first two marriages. And by the way, I'm now married a third time to Jana, and we've been married 27 years. We're coming up on 28 years.
We're celebrating next year, Biggie, right?
Where's the barbecue on that one? We have the NPC crowd cheering you on. Yes, you guys remember what NPC means, right? Oh, come on.
Crickets,
you forgot
crickets,
already?
Crickets.
Non-people something.
Yeah.
Non-people characters.
Non-playable characters.
There we go.
No robots.
No robots.
But I think one of the reasons this marriage has been successful and will continue to be is that I've learned my calling. And this is biblical. This is right out of scripture, Ephesians 5:25. As you talk about leadership, Marvin, it says, husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. So we as men are called to be Christ-like husbands, right? Like, what would Jesus do as a husband? What kind of husband would Jesus be? He'd be the most exceptional husband on the planet, and that's what we're called to be. We're called to die to ourselves, to lay down our lives for our wives. And I think until men realize this, they can fall into the trap. One of the traps that I fell into, maybe this sounds familiar to some of your listeners. Before I knew my calling, I thought, well, maybe I'm called to be my wife's boss, or maybe I'm called to be her father, or maybe I'm called to be her son. I never thought of those words. I mean, it wasn't like I walked around thinking those things. But here's what I mean. You know, some husbands, they want to be the boss. And like they treat their wives like an employee. Mm-hmm. And it's a performance-based relationship. I'll love you if you do these things, or I'll love you if you don't do these things, like a boss. That is not unconditional love. We are called to love our wives like Christ loved the church. Being our wife's father, that's the husband who's very demeaning. He's very critical. You know, he treats his wife the way he would treat his, you know, one of his teenagers, you know, like, hey, I'm the dad, my way or the highway. that doesn't really work with women. That's not a loving thing that we're called to. Or they want to treat their wife, they want to act like a son. What do I mean by that? This is the husband who, his wife just does all the work, right? Like your teenage son who doesn't want to clean anything or pick up after himself, never makes a meal, never puts his dishes away. This is the husband that he just wants to show up and be a frat boy and have his wife take care of him like a mommy.
Yeah.
Well, wives don't want to be mommies.
Right.
They want to be girlfriends. They want to be a wife. They want a man. And so until we know our role, that we are called to be Christ-like servant leaders as husbands, we're going to be something else. There's going to be a vacuum, and we might fall into being a boss, a father, or a son. So that's, you know, one of the first things that was so important for me to learn, and that's been a big change in how I treat Jana. I'm there to serve her, to lead by serving, mm-hmm. to be a Christ-like husband. You know, I always tell her, I want to know that you feel more loved than any woman that you know. I mean, I strive. I'm intentional about making her feel loved, helping her to know that she's loved and cherished and valued. And I want her to have fun being married to me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I want her to love coming home.
Besides affirming that verbally, are there any nonverbal ways that you do that for her?
That's a great question. Yeah, I mean, a lot of it is verbal, but a lot of it is like, I wash dishes. Mm-hmm. I fold laundry. Our wives do, you know, if you really thought about it and tried to quantify how much work your wife does at home versus you, mm-hmm. I guarantee you, myself included, our wives carry more than us. So one of the ways that I serve her is I try to help her around the house. Yeah. Like, I don't want her to think, again, I don't want to be her son. You do all the work. You're my mom.
Yeah. No, that's so good. Like last night, we brought our son down to youth group. So it's a 15-minute drive down from where we live. And typically it'd be, hey, I'll go drop him off. You go pick him up. And we take turns because it's a little bit of an inconvenience to drop him off, pick him up. Last night I just looked over her dinner and said, hey, how about we go drop off Caleb and go grab a cup of coffee?
Oh,
I saw her eyes light up. That's the most simple thing you can do. I saw her look at me. She goes, yeah, let's do that. And she just got giddy with excitement. We dropped Caleb off. We walked over to the Americana, got a cup of coffee, and walked around for an hour and waited for Caleb to be done with youth group. And that just meant the world to her.
Yeah.
It cost me $5. I mean, you know what I mean? It's like the cheapest date, but it just means it meant everything to her.
Yeah, that's such a great example, Marvin. Things like my wife in 27 years of marriage has probably only put gas in her car less than 5 times. I've always taken her car and filled it up. Every now and then, you know, she's really good about trying to do it while we're in her car, which is usually on the weekends. But every now and then she'll tell me on a Wednesday night after I just worked, you know, 8 or 10 hours or got home from the men's gathering, mm-hmm. Oh, honey, my car's on E. And it takes everything in me to not say, why didn't you tell me this yesterday? Yeah. But I'll pull myself together, get in the car, go get her gas. But, you know, it's about attitude, too. Totally. I don't want to do it complaining and whining and, you know, bitching and moaning the whole way. I want to go do it and just say, yep, I got this. I'll get you gas. You know, just simple things. Like you said, you spent $5 and your wife just so lit up about that. And so I'm always looking for little ways to bless her. Non-sexual touching, you know what I mean by that. I'm just always, you know, grabbing her, hugging her. Every morning I pray for her before she leaves for work. As a matter of fact, it's so habitual that if I forget, she'll walk up next to me, you know, saddle up next to me and say, I'm here for my prayer.
Aww.
You know, so it's just serving. And I think I just love that Jana enjoys being married to me.
It's great.
You know, I'm intentional about that.
Quick question. How did you, from where you were to where you are now in terms of just the process of learning to lead like that? Was that an overnight thing? What clicked? I mean, I understand that you're it's from failure that you're talking about, but then was that an overnight just switch that says, hey, doing this all wrong.
Yeah, Robert, that is such a great question. And what immediately comes to mind is, like I told you, after my second marriage, I started the failure of my second marriage. I got into marriage family therapy. And I had this great old counselor. He's probably 20 years older than me, the old gray-haired guy. And he said, Ralph, here's what I see. You are really good at getting women to fall in love with you, but you suck at maintaining love.
Wow.
And I mean, that just slapped me, you know, it was in a good way.
It didn't slap.
It woke me up that, oh,
see what you did there.
So you mean I can't just focus on getting them to the altar. I've got to continue, you know, and here's the thing. Most of us men, we know how to make a woman feel loved because we did it before we got married to get them to marry us and stand on the altar and say, I am going to be with this guy till death do us part. But then a lot of us, and I'm speaking about myself in my first two marriages, I just, okay, mission accomplished. She married me. I got her. And then I move. Yeah, cruise. And, you know, I kind of just stop doing the things I did to get her to fall in love with me. So that would be one thing I would share, you know, for the listeners is you already know how to make your wife feel loved because you got her to marry you. You got a total stranger to marry you and say, I'm going to be with you till death do we part.
You know, Ralph, that's what I think of, you know, the series and the vow, and that comes to me, the word pursue, right? Continue to pursue.
Yes.
Always pursue your whole time you're married.
You bring up a great point. One of the things I was going to share is our wives, there's this great book called For Women Only, written by a Christian female who's a researcher, Shanti Feldhahn. I've talked about the book before, and she said in interviewing, I think it was 1,500 women, lots of women, interviewing, surveys, etc., she found women had two really strong needs. One of them was to continue being pursued, you know, that they had this fear, do you still love me and are we still okay? And a lot of times, guys, we will just stop pursuing. Mm-hmm. And so in living my marriage with Jana, I live with the mindset that she doesn't have to come home tonight. Do you hear what I'm saying? I live like I need to keep pursuing her so she'll want to come home. I don't believe, you know, and I hope there's nobody in our audience, especially if you're from CI, I hope no man ever says, hey, I'm the husband, you know, you got to submit and blah, 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 and you can't leave me. God hates divorce. I've never said those words to Jana. What I want is to create an environment so awesome that any guy could come along and try to, you know, sweep her away. And she'd say, are you crazy? My husband is a freaking rock star in the way he loves me, pursues me, you know, and cherishes me. So that persistent pursuit is something, you know, when I read about it, I thought, wow, you know, like for most of us guys, like the day we got married, we knew our wives loved us and we knew they would always love us. But women, according to Feldhahn and the research she did, they have this fear like, do you still love me? And I think even as like me, I'm in my 60s, Jana and I are in our 60s, you know, as women are aging and having babies and changing, there's a lot of insecurity about how do I look? Am I still doing it for you? And so I'm very intentional about letting Jana know, I think you're so beautiful. I still do. I would marry you today in a heartbeat. If I met you today, I'd still marry you, but it wouldn't take me 3 years to do it because we dated for 3 years. Of course, coming out of two divorces, I had a lot of baggage I was caring about that. One thing I want to share, I'm hoping we have time for this. So how are you a Christ-like husband? I really feel like I need to say, you got to spend a lot of time with Christ. Mm-hmm. Like I think
that's good, Ralph.
If you're spending time with Jesus, like John 15 says, if you abide with me, I'm the tree, you're the branches. If you abide with me, you're going to produce fruit. And I think one of the fruits that we produce is Christ-likeness. You know, in Acts, when they were looking at Peter and he's preaching, the religious leader said, they recognized them. They were doing miraculous things, preaching this powerful message, and they said, weren't these men that were with Jesus? So if you want to be a Christ-like husband, it starts with you spending lots of time with Christ. How do I do that? I'm in church every week, and I get it. You're saying, well, you work there. But before, I've only been at CA a pastor 10 years, but for the 17 years prior to that, Jana and I were in church every weekend. I'll share this little brief story. When we got married on a Saturday, and I planned our honeymoon to start on Monday. Well, why is that? Because I wanted to get up on Sunday, and I wanted one of the first things we did as a married couple was to go to church together.
That's good.
So we got married on Saturday, around noon, had our reception and, had our honeymoon night. And we got up in the morning and we went to church. And mm-hmm. That's the way I was like, I was leading. Mm-hmm. And I've done that ever since. I mm-hmm. love church. Jana loves coming to church with me. And so church is important. Scripture, I might miss a day or two, but for the most part, every morning I'm up reading my Bible with my cup of coffee, a journal. I do something called SOAP. I love spending time in the Word. It challenges me, it corrects me, it changes me, it transforms me. And when it's hard to be married, I'm like, what would Jesus do? What is the Word telling me to do? The other thing, being around men, being around other married guys and in small groups. So there's other things, going to the men's gathering, going to the retreat. Put yourself in a place where you are abiding with Christ so that he can impact you and change you and transform you. And I guarantee you, as your wife sees that, she's going to fall more and more deeply in love with you, because our Christian wives, anyway, they want to see a guy that's leading like Christ.
That's good. Yeah. You read the scripture to us about, husbands love your wives as Christ loved the church. Well, how do we know how Christ loved the church if we're not connected to Christ? So that's a great point.
Amen. The other thing I think is important is we got to know our wives. What do I mean by that? Peter said to dwell with your wives with understanding. I need to know about my wife's brokenness, her wounds, her past, but I also need to know about her strengths, who she is, her gifts, her talents. I remember in my first two marriages, I never embraced my wife's differences from me. And even at the beginning of my marriage with Jana, sometimes I would be frustrated by who she was, her personality. And then we went to this great marriage seminar where they told us to list out our spouse's strengths. And that was the first time I looked and I thought, wow, we're better. I'm better because I have this partner that has these different strengths than me. And so I now embrace Jana's differences from me. I realize, like a good company, right? You can't have all accountants. You can't have all salespeople. You can't have all logistics people. You need a good mix of all of the different skill sets to be a better organization. And I think in our marriages, husbands, one thing we can do is just thank our wives for being who they are. Mm. Like Jana's super buttoned up and organized. I'm a little chaotic and, I'm not.
If you're chaotic, I'm a mess, dude.
Out of control.
He's the Ralph is one of the most organized men I know, but if you're chaotic, you are, I'm homeless, dude. I don't know what I am if I'm compared.
As you say that, thank you, but as you say that, I think that's happened because Jana has influenced me.
That's good, yep.
She's always been like an executive assistant. She's really good with details and schedules and et cetera. When we first got married, I was just all over the place, And again, coming out of an alcoholic family, I grew up with chaos. Chaos was my norm. Jana's strengths made me a better person. Mm. I am who I am today. Yes, Christ, God, and his transforming grace. And some of it has been just living so close to Jana for 27 years. She just made me a better version of myself.
Yeah.
So we need to know our wife's strengths and who they are, but also we need to know their weaknesses. My wife grew up in foster care for 5 years. She suffered some abuse, and so coming out of that, she had some wounds. And, you know, I wasn't really sensitive to those in our first few years of marriage. And again, at a different marriage seminar, we talked about what are some of your family of origin wounds. And as I heard Jana sharing her story, I got so convicted because I thought, oh my gosh, I have not been compassionate and kind and sensitive to some of the outcomes of that those wounds and brokenness. And so, you know, I'll share that in the first few years of my marriage, because of abandonment issues that she went through, being put in foster care and her not having her parents and going in three or four foster homes, she told me in the first few years of our marriage, and I didn't know this, she said, every time we went out together, I always made sure I had money and keys on my phone because I thought you were going to leave.
Wow.
And I was like, where did that come from, right? Like, I've never given you that indication. It was from her past. And so once I learned some of her weakness and brokenness, I was able to start intentionally trying to be part of the healing process. And how what did that look like? Just verbally even telling her when I left for work in the morning, I love you. I'm with you. I'll see you tonight. You know, texting her throughout the day. So I did that for so many years, always reassuring her that I was coming home, I was going to be back. And it took a few years, but after several years, that fear she had just kind of went away. She doesn't need the keys, wallet, phone anymore, you know, to in case I leave her. You know, she would say, I needed at least somebody to call or a couple bucks to take a cab to get home or whatever. So I share this with you to say your wives also, they may not have the same thing as Jana, but there's things that all of our wives experienced growing up, their families of origin, things that happened to them that give them some weaknesses and blind spots. And I think God wants to use us to be healing agents the way Christ and his unconditional love for us has been so healing in all of our lives, right? Yeah. Knowing that God loves us, he's committed to us, that's been such a healing thing in my own personal journey. And so I want to give that to Jana. So lots of unconditional love, recognizing her weaknesses, her strengths, that's been a big part of our journey.
Wow, what a story.
What a story, yeah. And over and over again, I heard you say when we were at a marriage seminar or a marriage retreat. So, shameless plug here, we've got something for guys that's coming up this week. So,
yeah, it's thanks, Marvin. It's called Marriage on the Rock. Robert already mentioned it. It's going to start, it's 8 weeks, Thursday night, starting on September 28th at 7 o'clock here at SAIT. It's only $25. It's a very small investment. And, this is what I want to say about marriage seminars. There's no perfect marriage seminar, but they're all good. And they all give God space to grow you and transform you. But here's what I will say to you men. I think most of your listeners are men. How do you think your wife would respond if you went to her and said, hey, sweetie, I recognize there's a lot of room for improvement in me as your husband. I heard our church is having a marriage seminar. Would you go with me? I love you, and I realize I'm not always great at it. I want to love you better. I want us to grow in our marriage. Man,
that's I'm such telling a win.
You. Yeah. Imagine wives responding to that is like, oh my gosh, who are you? Right. Mm. I mean, and it doesn't even have to be the one we're doing it at CA. But when Jana and I first got married, I told her, you know, I'm not very good at marriage. I've been divorced twice. Right. I mean, she had to know about my past. So I said, would you commit with me to go to a marriage seminar at least once a year? So we've been to probably 10 marriage seminars, some of them better than others.
Right.
But the win was that we went. We made the effort. My wife saw that, man, he really cares about our marriage. That's what that communicates. Like, you lead it. I guarantee you most of the people that are going to be in the marriage class and over the years what we've offered at CA, I'm going to bet mostly the wives have led that right? Like, hey, honey, do you want to go to a marriage seminar to their husband? Maybe not in all cases, but I think it's valuable when husbands would say, no, we need to do this. I'm leading this. You don't realize, guys, you have more power in your marriage than you might ever have dreamt or imagined. A lot of us can think, well, our marriage is good or bad based on how my wife is doing. But I think the reality is, if we're leading well, our marriage will be well, right? And our wives will respond because they are responders, right? So, yeah, Marriage on the Rock, starting in a week. Love to have you join us. And by the way, sorry, we only have room for 32 couples. I couldn't get the sanctuary because of some other things going on at CA. So, yeah, register for that.
Ralph, do you have to be a couple to be on this seminar, or is that something that maybe just a guy who's saying, well, I want to surprise my wife. I want to be a great husband, and I want to be part of this without, I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good question. I would say it's probably more beneficial to be there as a husband and wife, because the topics are going to be speaking to both husbands and wives. If I could just read these really quick. He's going to talk about the most important issue in marriage. I'm talking about the speaker. It's on a video. The laws of priority and pursuit, laws of possession and purity. A man's needs is 1 week. A woman's needs is 1 week. Power of positive communication, financial management in marriage, and then sexual fulfillment in marriage. So, yeah, there'd probably be some benefit if a guy couldn't get his wife to come, but I would say the most benefit would be to have the husband and wife in the room.
I agree. Well, guys, if you want some more detail on that class and how to register, you, of course, go on our website, cachurch.com, and you look under ministries, and then there will be Marriage on the Rock will be listed as one of those ministries, and you can find information there and register before September 28th. And I really hope that along the way, over this last hour or so that you've been listening to us, that the conversation has spurred you to take some action, whether that's signing up for Marriage on the Rock, or whether it's being creative with a date night, or making sure that even just a text right now, pull over and send your wife a text letting her know how much you love her and how much she means to you. Little things like that go a long way. And so we want to be men that are mindful and good stewards of those beautiful, precious people God has put in our lives, and that's our wives. So let's be marriages that are on the rock. Thanks again for listening. Thanks to Ralph for being with us. Thank you for Robert and for George. And of course, thank you for you, our listeners. And here's a round of applause.
Thanks, Ralph.
Thanks for listening. Thank you. And again, don't forget to... I have to wait for all this applause. Don't forget to email us at men@cachurch.com.
For the barbecue.
If you want to come to the barbecue, we'd love to have you. Right now we have two guys, but we're looking for two more at least. So see you next time.